one unfortunate part of being isolated in this village this year has been we've really missed out on a lot of what's been going on this year in relation to the Year of the Augsburg Confession and Roman Catholic Lutheran dialogues. We were looking for a Catholic church up in Nona's Valley, and we couldn't find any to dialogue with. But I'm wondering how many of you during this year in some way have been involved in Lutheran Catholic dialogues as part of the Year of the Augsburg Confession.
Not this year. What? I didn't mean this year.
Yeah, or before.
About 20 years ago or so, there was quite a movement.
Yeah.
I can't think of the name of the movement. Movement of bringing Protestants and Catholics together.
Yeah, we...
Ecumenical movement.
Yeah. 15 years would be a pretty good 15, 20 years. Now, I think part of the of some of you being involved in Lutheran Roman Catholic dialogues this year has been the thrust of this celebration, and I hope this will be felt today, that in the past when Lutherans would get together for Reformation celebrations or celebrated confessions, it would be kind of a big Lutheran bash. And at that time, it would be a wonderful time to celebrate that we were better than other Christians, that we had more truth. And that we had discovered the true interpretation of the Bible over and against all the other churches that were had various degrees of falseness. And I think what we've, in discovering the rediscovering the Augsburg Confession, we've rediscovered its call to unity. And so this year has been a year when there's been so much emphasis, I think, on what the spirit of this confession is, and that is that the church may be one. I hope if you're here today and you're not a Lutheran, or not a member of a Lutheran congregation, that you'll feel this, that it's just not an in-group today having a birthday party. Okay. But rather that you'll feel the spirit of the Melanchthon and the first confessors of 450 years ago this day presented the Augsburg Confession to Charles V, the emperor, and to the representative of Pope Clement VII. Now, this is another confession. I'm just curious how many have at least read one article of the Augsburg Confession. And you're like, that's pretty good. I have. I would guess that a year ago or even 5 years ago I asked the same question and there was the only person might have been someone who went to seminary and had to sign on the dotted line before ordination that you agreed with the Augsburg Confession, whatever. It also, when I was first aware of the significance of the Augsburg Confession was when I was in seminary, I would go, every Sunday I would go and preach in this little town in Illinois, and it was called the Matherville Community Church. And then once a month, one of the seminary professors would go there and have communion with the Matherville Community Church. And I remember asking him once, well, why, you know, when Lutherans are supposed to have this quote, altar and pulpit fellowship, why do you go and have communion at the Matherville Community Church? And he says, well, they're a Lutheran church. And I said, what? You know, there's nothing Lutheran about the liturgy or the architecture or anything. And he said, well, when they asked me to come and share communion, and I said, I told them all you have to do is line up some Sunday and I'll sign under the Augsburg Confession. So he had all of these people in the school community church one Sunday, and they all signed their names under the Augsburg Confession. He declared them an independent Lutheran church. Probably those people had read the Augsburg Confession more than most of us. That was interesting. Well, I want to start today. My hope is to do this presentation that I have in a half hour, and then that will allow 20 minutes or so for discussion and questions. So here we'll start flying. The the background of the Augsburg Confession, we have to first get our mind in kind of the swirl of crazy politics of that day that were in some way similar to our day, but also different. That it was 1517 that Luther nailed the 95 Theses to the castle door at Wittenberg. So now the Augsburg Confession is some 13 years later. 2 years after Luther nailed the 95 Theses, a grandson of Ferdinand and Isabella, who I believe sent Columbus to America, is that right? The grandson, Charles V, became a teenage emperor of the Holy Roman Empire. And by this time now, he's grown up and is a young adult. And he has two plans, and that one is to expand his empire, and the other is to protect his empire against the threat of the Turks. And therefore, the politics are crazy because at the Augsburg Confession, Charles V is together with the representatives of Pope Clement VII. 3 years before the presentation of the confession, Charles V, in a hostile act towards the Pope, sent his armies and sacked Rome, which didn't create a lot of good feelings, and really defeated the armies of the Pope. But now, probably because of the threat of the Turks, they've gotten together enough now to at least talk and decide that something has to be done about the Lutherans. Okay, now, so Charles V calls a diet to be held at Augsburg in Germany. And you have to think of his emperor not being just German, but his empire. It included like parts of Netherlands today, Spain, parts of France, and parts of Germany. It was a tremendous empire called the Holy Roman Empire. And within this empire, he had all kinds of local leaders who were very independent, and there was always a power struggle between the local leaders and the emperor, and you'll see this now as they clash together at Augsburg. Okay, Charles calls the diet at Augsburg, and what he wants is peace between the Lutheran party and the papal party. And when you're talking about the Augsburg diet, you can never talk about Lutherans and Catholics. The only person that had anything to do with the Augsburg Diet that wasn't a Roman Catholic was Martin Luther. And remember, he was the only one that was excommunicated. Everybody else coming as the Lutherans are faithful, loyal Roman Catholic. They have their names on membership lists of Roman Catholic parishes. So we can't say it was the Lutherans versus the Catholics. It was two parties within the Roman Catholic Church. Those who followed the teachings of Luther and those who we would call the papal party in the presentation today. One desire of all was to preserve the unity of the church. And the motivations for this went from the very best to the very worst. Philip Melanchthon, who wrote the Augsburg Confession, was Luther's associate. His motivations were really the dream of Jesus and the prayer of Jesus, that the church be one, even as God the Father and God the Son are one. And then the motivations went all the way to Charles V, whose motivation was, how can I raise a decent army to fight the Turks if the church is divided? So you see how the politics of the day played into this diet at Augsburg. So on January 2nd, 1530, with the Pope, Charles V issues an order for the Lutherans to appear in Augsburg for this diet and to present their case in a way that they hope will be acceptable to the Roman Catholic or the papal party. Now, there's an interesting thing about calendar and dating. You know how we current Western 20th century people keep calendars, so at 2 o'clock we know we have an appointment. I wonder how many of you keep a calendar like that. That's what I have to get back to in September, the calendar, you know. And if we're, if we have a 2 o'clock appointment and get there at 2:15, we are called late, right? Okay, Charles ordered the Lutherans, and really the leading Lutheran was Elector John Frederick of Saxony. He was the political leader of the area of Germany where Wittenberg was and where Martin Luther, in the center of the Lutheran Reformation, Elector John Frederick of Saxony. They were ordered to be in Augsburg by April 8th, and they were told if they were not there by April 8th, the Diet would start without them and all the decisions would be made without the Lutheran Party. So in a tremendous panic, the Lutheran Party showed up on May 2nd. And now we have to visualize the drama now that begins to happen in the city. Now, Duke John Frederick, the Elector of Saxony. Elector means he had something, he was part of electing Charles V to be Emperor of the Holy Roman Empire. So right now you know that he has a, that Charles V has a political debt to pay to John Frederick. And they, you know, we would, if we were going to a diet, we would slip into town with 3 suitcases and check into the Holiday Inn or Motel 6. And Duke John came with 160 people, including knights, soldiers, courtiers, lawyers, and professors. Now, he was compared to when the cardinal came and the emperor came, this was nothing. So in a town like Augsburg, if you can just kind of feel the excitement mounting. Okay, well, Charles, who sent the order that the Lutherans must be there by August 8th or else the diet would start without them, arrived on June 15th. So what did Melanchthon, who was a Lutheran theologian, by the way, Luther started towards Augsburg with Duke John Frederick, but they dropped him off at Coburg, which was about 100 miles from Augsburg. And now the reason they dropped him off was the decision that it would not be, even if Luther may be granted safe passage, it would not be safe for him to be there because he was a criminal, excommunicated, had a price on his head. And they all had the memory of John Huss, the earlier reformer. The Catholic, Roman Catholic Church had promised him safe passage to a discussion of his teachings. He was promised safe passage and then burned at the stake when he got there. So the decision was made that Luther would not go to the Diet at Augsburg. And this was a real hardship on Luther, because after leading the Reformation, it was really at this point when the Reformation kind of passed him by. And you might know, some of you maybe could share a little of this feeling if you one day you retire and you go home and start mowing the lawn and realize everybody down at the office is still carrying on and even initiating new ideas without you, and it takes a while to pull yourself together again and say, I'm a worthy person. Well, Luther now is left behind, and the Augsburg Confession goes along without him. However, during this 6-week period now before the emperor arrived, he sent letters back and forth by a courier, and I was trying to find out if this was a person or a pigeon. But I couldn't find that out. But then as it was closer to the day of the reading, it was too late for messages, so the final revisions were made without Luther, and Luther was extremely nervous, it's reported, because I'm not sure if he ever completely trusted Philip Melanchthon not to kind of sell the whole Reformation out in a great act of compromise. So the one report I read that during the actual Augsburg Confession, Luther was translating Aesop's fables into German. Now, it's an important point here that most of us are not aware of, is that if we take the name Lutheran for our worshiping communities, this to be a Lutheran is not to follow Martin Luther, but it is rather to say that we base our confession of the people on the Augsburg Confession. And Luther even had some trouble accepting the Augsburg Confession. He finally signed it. He thought it was a little too compromising, but he finally did say that Philip is a so much cooler person than I am, it's probably better that he was there writing this. So Luther did finally approve, but we must realize that our church is based on a confession that even Martin Luther himself had some trouble approving. And that was all new to me. I've always thought we're the Church of Luther. Most of you thought that? Rather, we learn here that we're the Church of the Augsburg Confession. Well, now, June 15, Charles V arrived in Augsburg, and the report is it was late in the afternoon. He came with hundreds of knights, thousands of soldiers, servants, nobles, dukes, counts, and church officials. And he was greeted by choirs, trumpeteers, town officers, and church leaders. If you can just close your eyes and just imagine the commotion in the city of Augsburg. And then, so when he arrived, they were ready to have this tremendous imperial parade into the cathedral. And now the first argument now was who would march in the head of the line. Now notice the humility now that is emerging. Okay, the Roman Catholic representative of the Pope was Cardinal Campeggio. And anybody that speaks Italian, am I saying that right? No Lutherans speak Italian. Cardinal Campeggio. He thought, because he was representing Pope Clement VII, he should march in the front of the line. The German Lutheran electors convinced the emperor that he owed them something because they had helped him get elected. And so the Duke of Saxony, Luther's Duke and Luther's friend, got to carry the great imperial sword at the very front of the parade, and Cardinal Campeggio got put kind of towards the middle in a more humble place. It's very possible that the ultimate final split of the church at that time was more a result of the parade line than it was the reading of the Augsburg Confession. Well, back to Then they all marched in great humility into the cathedral, and they sang the Te Deum, which we sing here at Sunday morning matins. And then they had other arguments. Emperor Charles, there would be several days now before the reading of the confession. So Emperor Charles V said that he wanted no Lutherans to preach around Augsburg during these days, and this shows how the power was fairly balanced, that he didn't have the final say. The electors, dukes and others simply said no. So you had Lutheran preachers. It was almost like Peter and Paul saying, we have to preach. And then the next big argument was the emperor planned. Now, just before the reading of the confession, a tremendous Corpus Christi procession. You know what that is? It's carrying the reserved host on a pole, and then everybody bows before that, and the Lutheran Roman Catholics now said they wanted to have nothing to do with this. So they finally reached a compromise, and they went to the Corpus Christi parade, but the German princes, who were the Lutherans, as the host went by them, they all stayed standing with their hats on. Well, these were just little side dramas that are going on as we're getting ready for the reading of the confession. Okay, the confession was to be read on Friday, June 24, and the papal party now tried to manipulate it so there wouldn't be time to read it. In other words, it would just be handed to the emperor, but the Lutherans wanted it read as a witness to their faith. And again, when I'm saying Lutherans here, now I'm still saying Lutheran Roman Catholics. So they finally reached a compromise that it will be read on Saturday, And if this decision had not been made, we would have had the celebration yesterday. So it's finally now held on Saturday. Only the Catholic or the Papal Party wins, partly because they get it put in a room that's too small to hold very many people. You can see all these important things. Not like kind of a peace talks today. It's been a year. Remember the, was it in Vietnam? When it was in Paris, months were spent on the shape of the table or something. And then, okay, so on Saturday there's time to read, and so the emperor is there. Philip Melanchthon, up until the very last minute, he's making last minute corrections, changes. Every change he makes, he hopes that it will not compromise the faith of the evangelicals, and at the same time it will be written in such a way that the Roman Catholics will approve of it, and the unity of the church will be preserved. Now, I want to stop a minute and just say something about why does the Augsburg Confession still live today? You know, why is it still relevant? And I think the best answer to that is that when we read in Ephesians, we read that the very death of Christ on the cross is to draw the whole world together, or Colossians, I mean, to draw the whole world and all things together in oneness and unity. I think anything that comes out as a witness to the final unity of God's creation is something that always lives. And this this is evident in the preface. If you have one of these books, it's the middle of page 5. The desire is to have all of us embrace and adhere to a single true religion and live together in unity and in one fellowship and church, even as we are all enlisted under one Christ. So now it's with this hope and this dream now that the 9 presenters, and you'll meet them tonight, so let me just say anything more. The 9 presenters come before the Emperor, Cardinal Campidio, Philip Melanchthon is there, and probably as many as will fit in the room. Christian Beyer is a young lawyer from the Saxon court, and he is chosen to read, and the reports from the Augsburg Confession are that he read loudly and triumphantly. Also, maybe it finally failed because he read too triumphantly. We have a lawyer in our church at home that every time he reads the lessons in church, he reads just like Christian Beyer. If you want to know how Christian Beyer read, you come to our church some Sunday when John Kirk, the lawyer, is reading the lessons. The place just shakes. Now, let's just look now at the Augsburg Confession. And part of the excitement that developed maybe a year or two ago was when the ecumenical person in the Vatican in Rome said that Rome must take a new look at the Augsburg Confession and possibly declare it a valid but incomplete statement of the Christian truth. And it's a way that the Roman Catholics are rereading this. And while I think at that time, a year or two ago, there was too much hope, because I think probably the priorities of the Pope John Paul II are not in moving quite as fast, although he is interested in the unity of the Church. Yet, you know, it's a threatening thing. What if all of a sudden we'd wake up some morning and the Roman Catholic Church had said, we accept the Augsburg Confession? Our problem then is the Reformation's over. But, however, a friend at home, Jack Lindquist, is not at home, it's where I did live in San Diego, and he'll be on the faculty here at Holden in the end of August. And one of his papers he wrote on the Augsburg Confession said this, the fundamental question before us now is not whether Rome is going to recognize the Augsburg Confession, but whether we are. And I really want you to feel the power of that fundamental question, because I think the more you get into the Augsburg Confession, you start realizing more and more how much we as Lutherans have really drifted from our original confessional Catholic identity. And it almost makes you shudder that we live in kind of a schizophrenic world of saying the Augsburg Confession is our confession, but it's really a type of American Protestantism that we've adopted as our style of almost belief in our church life. Well, I want to look just at three concerns now that you'll see in the Augsburg Confession. One is that, as the Lutheran Party says, we are Catholic. And secondly, the Lutheran Party there says we are evangelical Catholics. And thirdly, the Lutheran Party says we are reforming Catholics. Okay, the first is we are Catholic, and the point is made, especially at the beginning and throughout the confession, that we of the Lutheran Party stand in total unity with the historic Roman Catholic Church that is built on the foundation of the Apostles, the Holy Scriptures, and the Church Fathers. And a point that's made throughout the confession is that the Lutheran Party tries to convince the emperor and Campidio that really the Lutherans are better Catholics than the Catholics, that we are more faithful to historic Roman Catholic tradition than the present Pope and the present people around the Pope in Rome. And so it's in a very meticulous way throughout the confession you can follow this now, as Lutheran teachings are tied to the creeds, to the ecumenical councils, to the church fathers, to the great heroes of the Roman Catholic Church and the great early teachers of the Roman Catholic Church, just to say over and over again, don't kick us out. Don't kick us out. We are faithful Roman Catholics. And you can read, especially in Articles 1, 2, and 3, how the Lutherans want to make it so specific that we are not Protestants that are choosing to leave the church to form our own more pure church, but we stand in line with the historic church as confessed in the great creeds that come out of the ecumenical councils, and especially the Nicene Creed. Okay, but then the confession of what, who are we within the Roman Catholic Church? They make it very specific who we are and who we aren't. And probably Article 4 is the definite statement on what our task is and who we are within the Roman Catholic Church. I'll just read this because some say this is the heart of the confession. It is also taught among us that we cannot obtain forgiveness of sin and righteousness before God by our own merits, works, or satisfactions, but that we receive forgiveness of sin and become righteous before God by grace, for Christ's sake, through faith, when we believe that Christ suffered for us and that for his sake our sin is forgiven and righteousness and eternal life are given to us. For God will regard and reckon this faith as righteousness, as Paul says in Romans 3:21 through 26 and 4:5. In other words, you don't believe us, go look it up in the Bible. So what the task now of the Lutheran movement and their desire to stay a Lutheran movement within the Roman Catholic Church is that we would be a teaching movement, and we would teach. Say it this way, Lutherans are Catholic Christians who teach that our acceptance by God, our invitation into the kingdom of forgiveness, our peace, our wholeness, our reconciliation with one another is totally a gift of undeserved mercy received by faith.